When we think of people being spied on by police, fired from their jobs, socially ostracized, arrested, and prosecuted because of their political beliefs, we tend to think of other countries, not the United States, certainly not Connecticut. Yet this state has a long tradition of political repression. A Connecticut sedition law once made it a crime to print what it called scurrilous or abusive matter concerning the form of government in the United States, its military forces, flag, or uniforms. And a New Haven ordinance once banned the display of red flags during demonstrations. Attacks on dissenters increased during the 1950s as the Cold War intensified. In Connecticut, there were arrests, prosecutions, police infiltration of organizations, firings, blacklisting, and even mob violence directed at those alleged to hold unacceptable political opinions. This was the period of Senator Joseph McCarthy's famous investigations of alleged communist infiltration of colleges, government agencies, and the U.S. Army. Senator McCarthy's investigating committee never came to Connecticut, but in 1956, a similar committee, the House Committee on Un-American Activities, came to New Haven to investigate alleged communist activities here. Katja Gildan and her late husband Bert Gildan are the authors of the bestseller Hurry Sundown, and the recently republished novel Between the Hills and the Sea, which was based on their experiences in Bridgeport. Katja Gildan.
My husband was the first witness before the committee.
The committee called dozens of witnesses to testify about alleged communist activities in Connecticut. The state's newspapers gave the hearings banner headlines. After testifying at the hearings, Bert Gildan returned to his job at the Singer factory in Bridgeport. Katja Gildan says that for the first 2 or 3 weeks, he didn't have any problems.
Actually, we had a party at our house one night with his foreman and several of the other people that were his co-workers and whatnot. The next day, he finds that he's fired. Why is he fired? He's misconduct, you know, and that he was a danger to himself. And the other employees claiming one of them wanted to throw him out of the window, or several of them wanted to throw him out. He'd experienced no hostility whatsoever in those few weeks. Had nothing.
Katja Gildan says when her husband, Bert, called his union for help, the head of the union said, of course.
Then he went off and made an announcement. Bert wasn't a member of the union. Bert has his IUE card, you know, with his dues right off. So the union refused to represent him in the grievance over the firing. So he sued for arbitration. One in the Bridgeport Superior Court, one in the Connecticut Supreme Court, and one in the arbitration hearing.
But Bert Gildan still didn't get his job back.
By this time, Singer had converted, they told us, to defense industry. They were no longer producing domestic goods, and they doubted whether Bert could get security clearance. The aftermath of it all is, one of it is the guy that was supposed to throw him out of the window, he runs into in the supermarket one day. He begins to cry on the shoulder how he's been mistreated by the company. He's been sent to wash toilets, etc. And he has this terrible allergy in his hands as a result. And so this was the guy that was supposed to throw him out of the window.
Bert Gildan's attorney was Catherine Rohrabach, now a well-known Connecticut civil liberties lawyer. She defended many Connecticut dissidents in the 1950s and 60s. Rohrabach says she was ostracized as a result of her activities.
Things really closed down heavily. I could count on the fingers of one hand the lawyers who spoke to me on the street in New Haven.
Rohrabach says there was plenty of evidence that political dissidents were being spied on. She believes this spying had a chilling effect on political expression.
I always thought of the worst and most destructive thing was the sense that there were informers in organizations. And the feeling that you just didn't know who you could trust who was around you when you said something.
Harassment of dissenters was nationwide during the Cold War. And as intense as it was in Connecticut, Catherine Rohrabach believes it was relatively mild here compared to other parts of the country.
Connecticut was really a rather unique place. It was something of an island in terms of what's generally been referred to as McCarthyism. And there was never the same sort of witch hunt mentality in Connecticut that there were in other places.
If so, it must give cause for reflection on the state of liberty in the United States as a whole in the Cold War era. In Eastern Europe and the former Soviet Union, The end of the Cold War has been accompanied by a fresh look at past decades of political repression, even an effort to build monuments commemorating its victims. Perhaps it's an appropriate time for such a re-evaluation on both sides of what used to be the Iron Curtain. For Connecticut Public Radio, I'm Jeremy Brecker.